Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on Friend of Maryland, I chat with Marilyn Wan about fat representation in today's world. And I spotlight a piece on the perils of propaganda by Carolyn Fox. I'm very excited to announce that the schedule for the Fat Studies Reflective Intersections Conference has now been posted online at the conference website. You can find that fs2012.massey.ac.nz. Online registration is also available, including an option to attend the conference online. Those that choose this option will pay a reduced conference fee and will have access to conference materials recorded online. We're also hoping to allow access to actually attend the conference online live as it happens while tweeting in and emailing in any questions that you might have for the various presenters. Go and check it out today. Joining me is Marilyn Wan, a fat activist from San Francisco and the author of the book Fatso. So Marilyn, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Oh, thank you. It's so much fun. Awesome.
So positive representations of fat bodies are rarely presented in the mainstream culture. Here in New Zealand at the moment, in fact, we have several shows running, including The Biggest Loser from the United States, Weight Extreme Makeover, Weight Loss from the States. We also get a lot of programs from the UK. So there's the Big Fat Family Challenge and, you know, the World's Heaviest Man. And it's all the same narrative. So it's unhappy fat people who are miserable, who are unhealthy, who want to quote unquote change their lives.
Who are eager to be publicly abused.
Oh, and humiliated, because it is humiliating.
And beat up on. And, you know, I don't care whether they lose weight or not, but that is not a proper thing to do, to be desperate to go on national television or international TV to have someone beat up, be abusive to you. Oh, my goodness.
And, of course, we're not going to get someone, a television station, willing to follow you around for a year or me around for a year, because we're not unhappy, miserable fat people. And a happy fat person who loves their life and loves their body probably doesn't sell good TV.
Well, not yet.
Not yet. That's right.
It's going to happen.
That's right. We have faith.
I think it's super important just to not be willing to give your precious attention to hatefulness. And the stuff about like The Biggest Loser, that's not something I would ever spend more than the time it takes to change the channel watching.
Right.
You know, I mean, life is short for all of us human beings. We're not here forever. And, you know, there are some things that are just do not merit our attention. And I think if people stopped watching those shows, they would stop being popular. So I find them horrifying. I find just the level of pain and sorrow and abuse that's being inflicted just terrible. And the aspiration or the hope that, you know, oh, look, if everyone could only be thin, then they wouldn't be social outcasts. Well, that's exactly backwards, right?
Right.
But anyway, I'm going on.
No, that's okay. So what I thought we could talk about is what are some positive representations of fatness and what are some fat-friendly aspects of the culture? So music, books, movie, TV.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
So what kind of stuff do you like?
When I think of books, I think of Daniel Pinkwater.
Okay.
He's a really wonderful fat guy who has been writing books with fat characters who are positively portrayed as the heroes and fabulous centers of their own lives for years. He's got a lot of children's books, and one book that's written for grown-ups called The Afterlife Diet, which is really fun. and I think his children's books are fun to read just for me. So I really like a book that he wrote called Fat Camp Commandos. And then the follow-up was Fat Camp Commandos Go West.
Nice.
And in it, there are some fat children whose parents get duped into sending them away to this awful, sleazy fat camp.
No!
Which all the fat camps are awful and sleazy. So, but the one of the fat children is really smart. Her name is Mavis Goldfarb, and she undermines the fat camp, and then they escape, and then they go and they start liberating billboards and doing other fat activist activities. And then they get caught by a fat constable who tells them that they can either go down to the jailhouse or they can enlist in the Fat Gilbert and Sullivan Company. And so they become music theater stars. So I think this is a perfect story. And Daniel Pinkwater is just a really smart, funny, eccentric genius whose books are always fun. So, and he's been a really good friend and mentor to me over the years, and I'm just honored to know him. So if you haven't read Daniel Pinkwater yet, I think you are in for some fun.
No, I haven't.
That's the first thing that would occur to me.
That they're for kids? You said that they're kids' books?
They're mostly children's books, but there are some young adult novels that are really much better than a lot of the novels that I read that are sold, marketed to grown-ups.
Right.
So, actually, he wrote a young adult novel called Young Adult Novel, and that one is particularly exquisite in every page, in every way. It's just really brilliant. So I can't even start to tell you about it, because if I start, I will somehow not be as amazing in my description as just the book itself. So I hope you'll check out.
No, absolutely, I will.
For sure. And when I think of musicians, one of the first, well, really growing up, I didn't have any fat positive role models other than Miss Piggy. And
awesome.
Miss Piggy, I think, is a supreme fat role model. I don't think there's anything ever wrong with Miss Piggy. So she was pretty great. But I think when I hit my teen years, she really wasn't, you know, she didn't carry me through. Like, she
right.
was good.
It's difficult to identify with a Muppet when you're a teenager.
Right, yeah. Exactly, yeah. You kind of have to let go of the foamy friends. But a woman that I met in my early 20s was really inspirational to me. Her name is Deborah Ayal. And she was a singer for Romeo Void in the 80s, a really amazing art rock band that is still played on the radio. So they did songs like I Might Like You Better If We Slept Together.
Oh, I love that song.
Never. Right? And so you're going to cue music right here when we're talking about
Absolutely.
Her.
Absolutely.
So Romeo Void is awesome, but she's still making music. And I got to be part of a writer's group that she had been in San Francisco in the early mid-90s, and I heard her read a poem called My Size that was about her experience being a fat woman walking into a department store's lingerie section and being snubbed by the sales girl. And her refrain is, you know, the sales girl says, "We do not carry your size." And she's like, "My size doesn't need to be carried. I danced all night and swam in the Gulf. And, you know, I do not apologize for my size." So I heard her read this poem, and it was the first public declaration of fat pride I had ever encountered
Wow.
in my life. And it was revolutionary in that it kind of turned me around to a different direction that I then pursued in my own ways. But Deborah is still making music. She's got a new CD out called Stay Strong, and I love her music. She's still doing the same great music and great lyrics that she's always done with her passionate singing. So, I mean, I know everybody else was like Beth Ditto, and I totally adore me some Beth Ditto, but I think, you know, we also have to make some room on our iPods for Deborah.
Do you think it's important that there are fat role models and fat friendly images for people in the mainstream culture?
Wow. I think a lot of people think that the media that they're seeing is somehow an accurate representation of reality, which it's not. But if they're imagining that that's reality and they're not seeing any happy fat people, then that's a huge distortion. So it's super important for us to be visible and represented, and especially represented in the ways that we actually believe ourselves to be, not shown as a freak or a sidekick or a joke, which, you know, or an object of ridicule. Those are like the familiar ones. So I really look forward to more and more fat positive stuff, and I think it's coming. I do think it's going to happen. I also am not super, I'm not really willing to be grateful for stuff that still has some hateful content. So some people in the U.S. like a TV show called Mike and Molly.
That started here a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and I admit I haven't been willing to bring myself to watch it because it still contains a lot of fat jokes and a lot of hatefulness that I just don't want to give my attention to. I don't think it's worth my attention. So, I mean, I may be wrong about the show. Maybe there's not as much of that hatefulness as I imagine, but I tend to kind of not embrace things that carry stuff that I find objectionable.
Right.
But well, my phone might be conking out in 10 minutes or so. So if I lose you for any reason because of the battery, you'll call me back and
yes.
I'll have plugged in, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, good. Sorry about that. So it's painful. Like Mike and Molly, I think the woman who's the actor, both of them,
Melissa McCarthy,
they're hot, smart, talented people, right?
Yeah.
And also happen to be fat. And it seems like the show that Melissa McCarthy was on before was, in a way, a better, more fat positive character, even if she wasn't the lead.
Right, when she was on Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, yeah, but the main person who was the thin woman was so tiresome to me that I didn't watch it, I have to admit. I just thought that she was not the kind of person I enjoy spending a lot of time with, so I didn't watch the show even though I liked the other characters.
Yeah, I know that for me, I'm often finding that I engage in a bit of protection of myself when it comes to being exposed to media that might be anti-fat or fat hostile. So...
Right.
I remember in the sixth season of Grey's Anatomy, which is a show that I do enjoy. It's one of my guilty pleasures. There was one episode where they had an extremely fat man that had to, you know, come into the ER on like the back of a truck because he wouldn't fit in an ambulance. And I chose to just opt out of that particular episode because I love Grey's Anatomy. It is one of my favorite guilty pleasures. But I knew that if I watched that episode and there was anything that was anti-fat or fat-phobic or fat-hostile, that it would ruin the show for me and I would never be able to enjoy it the same way again.
Well, I think that's very savvy. I remember watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And
good old Buffy.
Yeah, everyone on that show is very thin, except for maybe one character who's slightly less very thin than the others.
Yeah.
And I just kind of turned off my... There wasn't a lot of overt fat hatred going on like there is, say, in Doctor Who. So I could watch it, and I could be like, yay, I feel like a Slayer. And then at the end, when everybody turned into Slayers, I was like, yay, the Slayer's not alone anymore. You know, I kind of identified with it a little too much. But I think there are ones or shows where I just, if it's not outright offensive,
right.
then I can not judge it by my usual standards. But... I think for the things that are plainly fat-hating, it's worthwhile to opt out, you know? That's a good answer. I was just thinking about images, and I so appreciate the website that Substantia Jones does.
Absolutely.
Called Adipositivity. Adipositivity.com is a wonderful oasis of redefining our beauty aesthetic to include fat people, and so important. And so I think that that's a necessary thing for people to have online. I also really love the Association for Size, Diversity, and Health in its blog, which they've started in the last week or two. They have a lot of really powerful, fierce, uncompromising posts about health and culture and our mainstream beliefs about weight and stuff like that are just really great. I rely on that website a lot. And I think also Leonard Nimoy's book,
The Body Project?
Full Body Project, where he had fat people modeling, was just gorgeous. And he did a brilliant job of doing the round of media interviews. And he was on Stephen Colbert, I think, which I don't know if you get that there, but it's a really smart, funny political humor show. So, you know, it was amazing to have Spock speaking up on behalf of fat girls, you know, and fat people in general, and he did a brilliant job of it. So I really am impressed with his compassion and his being able to expand his aesthetic.
Appreciation of what's beautiful.
And then speak up for it. And, you know, people were like, oh, come on, you're just attracted to fat women. And he's like, no, actually, this is not. And icky if I were to, you know, anyway. So I thought that he just did a really great job. I mean, it's not that he's not attracted to fat women, but that's not the reason he's doing it. And I think that's really an important thing to say. It's not wrong to be attracted to fat women for being fat or to be attracted to fat people for being fat at all. I just think that's not the only reason that someone would speak up against fat hate.
Right.
Who isn't fat themselves. But he really was great. Who else do I love? I don't know.
Well, I think you've given us a great variety, actually, books and movies and websites and things such as that. And I guess I kind of just want to close it off by encouraging the listeners of this show to seek out some images, some positive images of fat people in their own environments, whether it's through music, books, movies, the internet. There are positive images out there. They just need to seek them out and find them.
Yeah, for sure. Accept no substitutes.
That's right. All right, great. Well, thanks, Marilyn. I appreciate it.
Thank you. You rock. Keep going.
In the spotlight today is a piece from Fat and Not Afraid. It's a guest post by Carolyn Fox entitled Perils of Propaganda, and was published on May 14, 2012. Quote, before I began writing this post, I went to the dictionary to look up the meaning of propaganda. Here is what I found. Propaganda, noun, information, ideas, or rumors deliberately spread widely to help or harm a person, group, movement, institution, nation, etc. From everything that I've seen, the propaganda of the obesity epidemic has been lauded under the flag of help, when in fact it is clearly anything but. The thing I've been wondering about this week, after reading the fresh new wave of bullshit being spearheaded by the Weight of the Nation documentary, is what would happen if we truly believe the shit they're peddling. Let's imagine for a moment a nation in which all fat, obese, super obese, sort of overweight people, and generally dissatisfied folks agreed that obesity is the problem plaguing our nation and deserves to be eradicated. What exactly would that look like? Would there be an economic cutoff point for those who are affected by the anti-obesity measures? Imagine someone like Rush Limbaugh being told by the government or his employer that he is required to eat 1,200 calories per day and exercise a minimum of 30 minutes per day until he reaches his ideal weight. Or perhaps imagine Arnold Schwarzenegger, since technically he is obese. Do you think people would have faith in a governor of a state who is not even allowed to choose whether he gets to have a snack or not? Would there be racial considerations? Would the government provide exactly the same anti-obesity measures to African Americans, Mexican Americans? Would the poor receive the same health care as the rich? Obviously, anti-obesity is only relative to health, so clearly would have to have government-provided health care. Would senators receive the same anti-obesity health care as welfare recipients? Would we allow genetic manipulation? If we could guarantee genetically that a child would never be fat, would we take those steps in utero? Would we abort a child who had the potential to become fat? Would we accept austerity measures and sterilize anyone who has not conquered their obesity by a certain reproductive age? Would sterilization be equal among men and women? I could obviously continue with this list, since there are a myriad of ways in which the anti-obesity measures would affect the population, but I'm hoping that these examples give enough insight into the workings of my brain. If we aren't asking ourselves these questions, then really what is the point of the obesity epidemic hoopla? Oh yes, I know what the point is. It's to allow people a moral distraction, a moment to breathe and say, well, thank God at least I'm not fat. We don't have to worry about our environmental impact because, hey, at least I don't have as big of an impact as those fat Fattersons. We don't have to worry about the epidemic of child abuse and incest because, oh my God, did you see that fatty eat that burrito? Ugh. We don't have to worry about equal rights for all individuals, regardless of gender, sexual orientation, or race, because, oh my God, a fat person in a bikini. Clearly, this takes precedence. Have we really stopped to ask ourselves exactly what the obesity epidemic people want? Some may say personal responsibility, because fat is clearly a personal choice. But have we stopped to ask ourselves exactly what that personal responsibility entails? Who is going to enforce this personal responsibility? Our employers, senators, the president, who? Who exactly will be subject to the enforcement of personal responsibility? And if we're talking about responsibility without enforcement, then should we be asking ourselves what cost this propaganda has? There's no measure to back up this hysteria, then these articles are just inflammatory. They encourage hatred and violence towards a specific group of people. And why is that okay? End quote. Closing the show is Romeo Void with Never Say Never.